Hey, 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 all you holiday hoes. Welcome to the Pilot Project Christmas special, holiday special, Hanukkah special, post-Thanksgiving Kwanzaa special.
It's definitely a thing we do every year. I don't know how special it is, but it's an annual tradition. We'll call
well,
it that.
Well, it's special because it's a not that every episode isn't very special, but it is special. It is even more so because we like
I'm
to
here.
Keep up with our
well,
tradition.
That's true.
Yeah, I mean, jumping the gun once again, sweeping in like a monster truck, you know, coming through a wall. That would be Javi Fuentes back again from Central Track to talk about one of those generic feel-good Christmas movies that seem to be all the rage these days.
God, for like the last decade, I would say.
Oh my God, and especially in these COVID angry times, the Lifetime Hallmark movie channels. Movies are like a warm, sappy blanket that just kind of makes you want to choke yourself out with that blanket.
I mean, have y'all been watching a lot more Christmas movies? Or
actually, it's been reversed for me. This was the first Christmas thing I've watched this year.
Wow. Really?
Normally, I'm a guy who, starting December 1, like every night I would watch like an old sitcom Christmas episode. Or we'd watch movies every weekend, and this is the first thing I've watched. So we have sworn that we're actually going to watch something Christmassy this weekend.
So this year you're just kind of a Scrooge, huh?
Well, it's, you know, honestly, we're affected by the fact that we're getting ready to move here in a few months, and we didn't feel like going getting all of our Christmas stuff out of storage for a few weeks just to have then go put it back in storage, knowing that we're going to be moving it again in a few months, and we don't, you know, so we just elected not to unpack that stuff and put it up this year. And so it hasn't felt really Christmassy. And we haven't had, obviously, I haven't had any Christmas parties or haven't barely seen you guys at all.
No,
true.
Just this. So just these calls.
Yeah, pretty
much.
Yeah.
I love your Christmas balls and I'd like to see them. So unfortunately, I haven't been able to do this year. So it's not Christmas without your Christmas balls in my face. So
well, next year you can have a big Christmas extravaganza if people take the vaccine and we can actually do things again.
I fully expect you to have a rager. Like a Christmas tree.
Absolutely. Yep.
Like I want people jumping off of the roof.
Sure.
Like that kind of stuff. Like this is how we do it.
This is how we do it.
Exactly.
It's Christmas time. All right. Well, we are talking about a very special movie. I'll put it that way. It is a Christmas movie. Christmas. This comes not to us from Hallmark, not Lifetime, from Up TV, which I've never
heard of. Yeah.
I thought it was maybe United Paramount TV, but I don't think that's the case.
I wonder if it's like, it kind of reminds me of just how like Pop TV, like nobody knew what Pop TV was until Schitt's Creek.
Like it's Canadian or something.
Yeah, like I wonder if there's something like that or I don't know.
Yeah. I don't think this will get the burn that Pop TV got after Schitt's Creek, but...
No.
Probably. I'm guessing not.
No.
This is A Christmas Movie Christmas. You can watch it on Hulu for free, Tubi for free, Amazon free with ads. Or if you're feeling especially in the mood and you want to watch this over and over again, like Christmas in the Cove or whatever that one the girl's watching, you can pay $12.55 for the DVD. Old school technology.
If you do that, you really need a smack across the face.
And also, I believe if you've got a Dallas Public Library card, you can watch it on their streaming app called Hoopla.
So, I've never heard of it. I didn't know Dallas had such a thing.
Yeah, they do, which is actually pretty handy. What sucks is that like you can find some really cool stuff in there. Like I watched like Suspiria in there. They had like Lawnmower Man, Satanic Panic, which was filmed in Dallas, came out like a while ago there last year.
JFK.
It's even like the, it's pretty fun. And I watched it as of 12/6 last year. I saw this movie. So yeah, it's got some pretty good stuff. I mean, there's other libraries that have a service called Canopy, which that's basically like a free Criterion channel, which I wish we had, but Canopy's actually low key pretty cool. You can find some good stuff in there. So I really recommend that if you're in Dallas or your public library's got a streaming service, look into that.
Most or you just want to support the Dallas Public Library. Maybe you're in Canada or something. You'd like to support Dallas specifically.
Yeah.
Do that.
Sure. Why not?
We have cool libraries.
I do. Sexy, sexy libraries. We have sexy Christmas hunks populating those libraries too.
Oh, yeah. Ready to teach women that, you know, they really, truly are special snowflakes that, you know, and they can fix them.
Yes, they can. This movie teaches you that it's okay to date your stalker and fall in love with them.
It's okay to sketch someone while they're sleeping. Yes. Which I did both of you guys, and you'll be getting your cards soon. Sweet. I hope you're okay with.
Well, and also to time both a dopey, cheery Christmas guy and an international pop star that looks like he's made out of, I don't know. He's just like the most generic person I've ever seen. Like
he looks like. Well, it's because he's a poor man's Billy Zane.
He's a thicker Billy Zane.
He's thick with three C's. Yes. I mean,
he's hunky, but he thick.
I don't know that he's fat, but he's bulky. He's a bulky guy.
Yeah. He's got a little more puff in his stuff than Billy Zane does.
Yeah.
This originally aired on October 27th, 2019. So it's a year old for us. It was created by Brant Doherty and Kimberly Doherty, who also did The Starving Games, which was a parody of The Hunger Games, 50 Shades Freed, and Pretty Little Liars. It was also written by those same two people.
I know the Pretty Little Liars connection there. I kind of secretly like that. I mean, not secretly, whatever. I like the show. It was dumb as
this
hell.
This guy stars in it, right?
Huh? Yeah. That's what I was about to know, is these two people were also two of the stars of this show. Or this movie.
I think he stars in Pretty Little Liars, actually.
Oh, I see. Yeah. It was directed by Brian Herzlinger from Twinkle All the Way and Meet My Valentine, lovely hits, I'm sure, and produced by Larry Grimaldi of Friend Request and Falling in Love, in being a play on INN, like a hotel.
Yes. Very catchy.
The official description of Christmas Movie Christmas is: two cute sisters live together. One loves Christmas movies and the other calls them predictable. They meet. They fall in love. It snows. The end. This time's different. They magically wake up in a Christmas movie. That is a terrible, terrible synopsis of this.
Yes, that's what IMDb had, though.
As we always like to do, we like to get some of those IMDb and Amazon user reviews. This comes to us from Vimes. Verified user Vimes, 5 out of 5 stars. Headline is funny and cute.
Which I actually agree with his assessment, though. I don't give it 5 out of 5, but what he says is wrong with it. I agree.
So the summary says, first of all, you don't know if Vimes is a he.
This user.
They. Let's be gender neutral. Yeah. Neutral here.
Neutral.
He says, strong start, super funny and original, mix in a comma. This movie didn't quite live up to its potential. It turned into a full-fledged Christmas movie about halfway. Don't get me wrong, that is not a bad thing in my opinion. I do feel that continuing the type of dialogue that the two main characters use during the first half throughout the movie would have been a bit better. Terrific bad acting on purpose, was it? And excellent acting by the main characters.
Yeah, I question if it was on purpose.
I do feel like this guy just basically is kind of blowing up our spot here, because it's kind of how I feel about it. You know,
exactly,
I
mean? Yeah.
So. This next one comes from November 2020. Corny setting, overacted, and delightful, from Oliganicella. Ignore the naysayers. This movie is touching, humorous, and touching. Okay.
Yeah.
Everything I mentioned in the headline is spot on and purposefully so. It's a movie in a movie, and the acting, scenery, and plot, etc. reflect that. So what if you can predict the ending? It's a rom-com, or as they put it, a rom/com.
Yep.
And finally, we got two more here. This one comes to us from Aaron Boros. So if you're a friend of Aaron, here we go. From November of 2019. Okay. I really enjoyed this Ho-Romo. And he or she puts in parentheses, holiday romance movie. So we got a new turn from a Ho-Romo. The cast was great.
That sounds offensive.
You got to be careful with the way you say that.
Yeah. You're really offensive about home.
What's up, Ho-Romo?
sounds like a really lame, like 90s bully in a teen comedy insult, you know?
It sounds like something Joe Rogan would call somebody. Like,
yes.
A Ho-Romo. All right. I really enjoyed this Ho-Romo. The cast was great and the plot was so meta, yet still adorable and satisfying. I wish the guys were slightly hotter, but I still thought that the chemistry was great. Love that it centered on the relationship between the sisters and how their wishes could come true. Adorable. And I wish I'd bought it instead of running. Well, you can go buy a DVD.
Yeah. This guy did not do very much for the hotness of Dustin's. I'll give you that.
I thought the same thing. He was not a good look for Dustin's. And finally, this one comes from Rob, who gives it 2 out of 5 stars. His headline is "One to Skip." Only watched because it was filmed in Frankenmuth, Michigan, a great place to visit. Movie was a very unbelievable, odd, and disjointed story. Well, got news for you, dude. It's a Horomo. So it is going to be unbelievable.
I just thought it was funny. He watched it for the filming location. I don't know that happens too often out there.
Yeah, those big Michigan fans out there, I guess.
Yeah.
Specifically Frankenmuth, Michigan.
Yeah.
You know.
It's like us watching
a
movie.
It's the Paris of the Michigans, you know.
Yeah. It's the Paris of the upper Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
It's like that if Dustin and I, coming from Abilene, Texas, which is a podunk town, which I assume also Frankenmuth, Michigan is, it's like us watching a movie just because it was filmed in Abilene.
Right.
Yeah.
Which, if it had somewhere better to film that was kind of Christmassy or relevant.
Yeah.
But yes, I'm with you.
And although Abilene's film location would be a greasy street and a tire fire, but.
Exactly. And a sign that says no Democrats, spelled TES at the end.
Yes. Ooh. Oh, and don't forget the train museum.
Yeah, true. Good point.
All right.
This sounds like the worst white place on Earth.
Hey, it's
probably fair.
It's a white wonderland. The cast is Brant Daughtry, who plays Paul, who is this stalker baker type. Lauren McKissack, who plays Eve Bell from The OA. I knew I'd seen her from somewhere before. I haven't watched very much of The OA, but I've seen her somewhere before. Transformers Titans Return, which I'm sure Javi is a big fan of, and SpongeBob.
Do love me some SpongeBob. Wait, what was the other one?
Transformers Titans Return.
No, that was a terrible series, man.
Yeah.
This also stars Kimberly Daughtry, who plays Lacey Bell, who is the, I think, real-life wife of Brant Daughtry. And finally, everybody's favorite Dustin, Ryan Merriman, from Final Destination 3 and Taken. Oh, and let us not forget Graham, played
Graham
by
Graham,
Brigid
yeah.
Duffy.
Brigid Duffy.
This whole movie... I mean, the whole premise is the two sisters. So there's Eve Bell, who works for a magazine company, I guess. She
magazines,
is,
what are those?
What are those? They are bindings of paper put together that you end up just sitting in a dentist's office for 20 years. But in theory, it's some sort of fashion magazine. I don't know exactly what she does, but she wants to be basically a graphic designer for the magazine. And everybody's keeping her down. The man's keeping her down. Mr. Marley, she works for Marley Magazine. I don't know if you understand the reference to the old Scrooge story.
Oh, yeah.
Referring to Marley.
Because, oh,
of
my
course,
God, that's what that
Marley.
Was? Yeah.
Yes, yeah.
No,
and her boss, Mr. Peterson, is always whipping her ass, keeping her down. But guess what? Mr. Peterson's right because her magazine cover designs are terrible. She is a high school level graphic designer.
Bombs dropped.
She's also obsessed with Christmas. She's obsessed with Lifetime, Hallmark, and Up TV style Christmas movies. I get the impression that she's one of those ladies that probably keeps her decorations up year round and probably watches these movies year round at the same time.
She's the type of person that thinks that liking the most commercial holiday of the year that permeates both, you know, commerce and religion is somehow like a personality trait.
It makes you quirky. I love it.
Yeah.
I fall down a lot.
So Lacey Bell shows up to Eve's office at Marley Magazine. I get the impression that she's also a frequent unwanted guest, but she shows up to whip Eve's ass about chastising her for wanting to be a graphic designer or that she's not pursuing her best, I guess.
Right.
And then I guess they go home, they whip her ass, and then they go home, right? And Lacey is supposed to have a date on Christmas Eve because, of course, lots of people do that.
That's a you know, whenever you go back home from the big city, you go on a date on Christmas Eve.
Yes.
Yeah, sure. Back home, I can get that. You get back with your old friends, maybe an old flame, you get a little threesome going together, you hook up, leave a wet spot and go home. But in this case, we're in the big city. I don't know that a lot of people just go on a rando date on Christmas Eve. Not sure that's a thing. Good thing I haven't been in the dating scene for about 10 years now. So
you stud.
I know. Who's a bragger here?
Look at this guy. been together with a person for 10 years. Dustin hadn't been on the dating scene since like 1994.
That's
so.
True, but
yeah.
So I could not help you.
Sure I forget how long it's been since I've been on, out of the dating scene. 4 years. 4 years.
Oh, look at this good list done over here. Yeah. More recent bachelor.
4 years.
me and our friend Micah could help you out about as much equally with the dating scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Lacey gets back. Her date didn't show up. She's still whipping Eve's ass. And so they decide to go on a walk to get some hot chocolate down like a really grimy alley. And the first thing I want to point out in this, and this is where they have their magical moment with Santa Claus, mm-hmm. but they're keep in mind, they're walking down. They're ostensibly going to get hot chocolate from, let's say, a street vendor, a Starbucks type, the Starbucks of hot chocolate, whoever that is.
Are you noting that they stole their cups?
No. Okay. Well, I don't know if they stole them, but which vendor sells kitchen holiday mugs full of hot chocolate that you just stroll down the street without a lid?
Yeah, exactly.
That is a very bad business model.
Yes.
It's a bad decision.
Yeah.
So, and then they are, I would say, putting themselves in danger because that is not a safe alley that they're walking down in freaking Meath, Michigan. It looks like somebody is about to jump out and attack them at any moment, which I would have taken as a welcome turn in this movie. That would have made it more exciting.
I would not talk to a Santa that's hanging out on that street.
Nope. Yes.
It's a bad idea.
Yeah.
It's I mean, grody.
That's a psychotic Santa waiting to creep on some ladies in an alley and take them to, you know, Christmas Town, wherever he's going. Take them some back alley Christmas gateway Town, or yeah. warehouse, an abandoned, his version of Christmas Town. It's an abandoned warehouse full of, you know, mannequins dressed up as elves. Mm-hmm. It's something creepy like that. That would have been a more interesting movie. I will say this is an interesting premise to the movie because they have this like, Lacey donates some money to the Santa and she's allowed to make a wish because she stuffs some money in his sack.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, they then go back home. They fall asleep on the couch together, and they wake up and they're in a Christmas, a Lifetime style Christmas movie.
Now, keep in mind that before this, you know, they were watching what is it, Christmas Cove.
Yes. Yeah.
So, like, they're doing that clever, you know, movie within a movie thing, but like the movie ends up becoming basically Christmas Cove.
Yes.
Yeah, I think they did Back to Christmas.
And it's really infuriating.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So it's like the concept, the conceit, I love. I think it's a great idea. It reminds me of John Candy's Delirious when he wakes up in a soap opera. It's a great conceit for a horror movie, for a Christmas movie.
And a horror movie, really.
That's what I was about to say, is where I think this movie should have gone was it should have been like, which they kind of allude to, that it's creepy. That it should have been being like a psychological horror movie, like Get Out. Like everybody seems nice on the surface,
yeah.
But they're all plotting to cut you up and put you in gingerbread cookies or something like that, yeah. Right? No, I mean, it could have been such a great horror movie, but they completely abandoned any semblance of a good idea about halfway through.
Stalker guy. Once we get into that, he would have been perfect for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, frankly, yeah. Graham fattening you up.
Well, that too. Yeah.
Well, and it's like, here's the thing. Like, you know, there's ways to do the whole like rom-com self-aware rom-com thing. Like there's a Rebel Wilson movie that came out like not too long ago. Let me double check on it. Isn't it Romantic? And that one was just so funny. Like I remember watching it, like I was super into it.
That one was good. Yeah.
But so there's that kind of parody, you know, like the very self-aware parody, right? So that's a good example of it, in my opinion. But then if we're just thinking about genre parodies, I mean, I was really coming into this movie thinking like, oh my gosh, are we going to get the Christmas movie version of like Dewey Cox or, you know, They Came Together, the Amy Poehler. Paul Rudd rom-com thing where it's just like,
oh yeah, yeah,
those are really good,
yeah,
like parodies of the genre that they're in while still being part of the genre that they're in.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how to describe the difference between like say specifically They Came Together, because like let's face it, Christmas movies are basically rom-coms with a coat of green and red and snow, right?
Yeah, sure.
I don't know what makes They Came Together specifically work better than this movie, but I think it's just maybe they just gave up on the snide kind of commentary of the of like the genre tropes. You know, like at a certain point, it's just like, especially, you know, the sister that doesn't care for Christmas, Lacey.
Yep.
She kind of stops criticizing everything. And just like all of a sudden, you know, like a guy draws pictures of you sleeping enough times. And I guess all logic goes to hell because that's just like, that's so creepy. But she's all of a sudden like, hey, I've got the Christmas spirit in me all of a sudden. And like,
oh, yeah, she does.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
She gets it in her a few times.
Yeah, Paul's Christmas in her.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, I think this movie betrays itself in a lot of ways. It's like the AI that becomes self-aware and then it loses its self-awareness, which is They Came Together is a great example. And the Rebel Wilson movie you mentioned is there the AI that that stays self-aware and evolves.
Mm-hmm.
And it lost us about halfway through, which I thought was a real loss because I really enjoyed, I mean, the acting wasn't great, the dialogue wasn't great, but I enjoyed the conceit of the movie for about the first half. And then, it, like I said, it betrayed itself and it got creepy and delivered the completely wrong, a terrible message it delivered to people.
I agree.
At home. Well, it got creepy and then, it, yeah, like you said, it just totally lost the idea of what it was trying to do. Yeah.
So I do want to back up. So we do have a few characters here. We have Graham who shows up, and I thought this was a real lost opportunity because when they wake up after falling asleep on the couch together in the apartment, they wake up in Graham's house. And Graham, they lived in the big city, as these movies will often refer to. They're now in, I forget the name of that. I think it's Holiday Falls or something
Holiday
like
Falls,
that.
Yeah.
Graham lives in Holiday Falls. Now, I think it would have been a cool sentimental thing that this movie had done if Graham had been a real grandmother in their lives. Let's say that maybe real Graham had died penniless, broken, eating cat food out of a can, and they never saw their Graham because they're terrible grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
And then they wake up and they have another chance to make things good with Graham again. Except of course, Graham's still trying to kill you. She's still trying to fatten you up for the gingerbread cookies. But I thought that would have been a cool sentimental beat to have Graham be the restoration of somebody that was actually in their lives that maybe they had ignored. Or had died early in their childhood.
It would have made more sense. It would have made more sense why they ended up trusting her so fast also, because one's like, this is fine.
Weird.
Yeah.
And it's so weird to like just have this made up lady who wasn't even like really their grandma or a like, because, you know, like if you're going to introduce a character like that, you should have her be in the quote real world, right? Like, see, like, oh, apparently like their grandma's like real grumpy or whatever, so like
exactly.
Scene of them being grumpy, but no, like we just hear it off screen and it's like, okay, we don't have a context for this person or like why she's even part of their story. Why can't they just not even have a granny character?
True.
I guess I don't know.
Well, it's like later Mr. Stevenson shows up in the last eighth of the movie suddenly, and he's, other than being grumpy at the beginning of the movie, in the real world he shows up in Christmas Cove Village, Holiday Falls. And they make this big deal about him having this awakening. So is he also from the real world? Or is he Mr. Stevenson within Christmas Cove world? And then why do we care suddenly about – we've had very little glimpse into Mr. Stevenson's real personality. And they make this big thing about
it. Yeah.
He's a character that was from the real world. It was such a weird choice.
Yeah.
Graham, though, is – I don't know. Did you pull the audio of her basically summing up the movie in a few sentences?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, let's play that. She is basically the equivalent of a non-playable character, an NPC in a video game, that their whole entire job is to provide exposition.
Oh, it's so nice to have you girls come on back to your hometown from the big city for the holidays. Maybe you can help me plan our annual Christmas bake-off while we decorate the tree and figure out who's sending Millie all those gifts on the 12 days of Christmas? So many birds!
This is everything I ever wanted. This is impossible.
So are these waffles.
Who wants seconds?
This place is amazing. It's almost like... No. Yes! My wish! We're in a Christmas movie!
There you go. Grandma fattening you up for the slaughter.
Exactly.
Like Graham is an NPC. She's a character in Zelda you go back to time and time again because maybe you forget who you talked to in the video game and you got to go back and see the repeating dialogue. That's Graham.
Yeah.
But I think I do think they missed a real opportunity there. So
I feel like this movie is a Christmas movie, missed opportunity movie. Yeah. The real title. Mm-hmm. Cause like everything is a missed opportunity here. Like they, I feel like it was like, you know, like go the full parody, you cowards.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Like, yeah, she's not even like consistently like, she's not even consistent as a like a kind of doting granny character. Like all of a sudden, like towards the end of the movie, she's also like, "You need to knock it off." And
yeah, cut the crap.
Yeah.
Oh yes, yeah. We like, have that audio later too.
This
yeah.
is when she was gonna like start slitting throats, you know, like a granny killing spree. But
yep,
and even so, yeah, even this weird character is a bizarre, you know, like inconsistent mess.
Yep.
As these movies are wont to do, they always have some central conflict. In this case, the local Christmas festival is in trouble because the party planner of the town has to leave. So Eve, I can't remember if someone volunteers her or she volunteers herself to save them, as she's also this forlorn, love-lost woman trying to find her man. And she's, of course, is over the moon that she's living inside this movie. And this is where we get our introduction to everybody's favorite Dustin. Right. The vague clay shape of a Dustin. It's like the Lionel Richie "Oh Hello" video version of a Dustin.
The Mr. Potato Head Dustin, yeah.
Mr. Potato Head Dustin, yes. And we also get to meet actor in the movie, Chad Matthew Monroe, who is the fake Billy Zane we talked about earlier. And he is an actor. He's also a pop singer, apparently. And he just happens to be in this little town of Frankenmuth, Holiday Falls, Michigan, Christmas town.
Mm-hmm.
And he is there dating... In this version of the world, he is dating Eve.
Yes.
So she finds out that she's already dating somebody. Spoiler alert, she ends up with Dustin in the end.
Yes.
And Chad Matthew Monroe ends up lonely, except he gets to sing that song that you heard at the beginning of the show.
He doesn't end up lonely.
Well, no, he gets hooked up with the best Dustin's ex-girlfriend. Yes.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
The hot chocolate girl. Yeah.
Because as, Eve says, like, everyone has a match.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. He ends up with her.
His match is high-end hot chocolate woman.
Mm-hmm.
Which she was kind of a poor man's Melissa Joan Hart in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. You want to know what her name is? Like her, like that. So Dustin, like, we come to find out that Dustin has a girl, a woman that he used to date in the big city. And followed him to the small town.
Mm-hmm.
And her name is Noelle St. Vanderhoot.
Yes.
Played by Addie Stafford. So that's... And the fact that she shows up in a Burberry scarf should tell you basically everything about her whole personality.
Yes.
And as it pertains to this movie.
One thing to note is that somehow Eve has gained magical powers in this world.
Mm-hmm.
They go back to Graham's house. She wants to decorate the tree, and there's not even a musical montage. It's just a flurry of activity, and Eve has decorated the tree in a flash of light, basically.
Yeah, I was going to say, she suddenly becomes the Flash and can do it super quick.
She has no other magical abilities in any other facet of the world, just, except in decorating trees.
Just tree decoration. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think the better opportunity here would have been, so... Everybody, like, okay, so if we're talking the parody of the concept, she's asked to decorate the tree. She decorates it, and she's terrible at it in real life. In the real world, everybody would say, what is wrong with you? You've got broken ornaments. Everything's out of place. There's only tinsel in half the tree.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody, the NPCs of this video game-like world, still think it's beautiful. Only Lacey's the one that can see how terrible of a decorator she is.
True.
That's a missed opportunity for comedy. But no, they play it for perfect here. And that she is she's got magical decorating powers just for Christmas trees, though.
Yeah, instead they push the term scrinch over and over again.
Mm.
Scrinch, you know, like that thing that you're supposed to know that is a phrase.
It's a Scrooge and the Grinch, you know, like people say.
Why couldn't you just say Scrooge? It's not a trademark term.
Well, that wouldn't include Grinch, Mark. You got to be both.
I guess. Grinch, I would understand maybe why you can't say it, but yeah. Scrinch? It was very forced. It's like they were trying to make it a thing, and it's not a thing.
Oh, they were trying to make it a thing, no doubt.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not a thing. And I will say also, Lacey is on the other end of things, being the cynic of the play is almost interestingly unmagical. It's interesting that Eve is magical in some ways and she's not. I thought that was an interesting juxtaposition. But everything for her is not magical until she runs into Paul, who is this goofy ass cookie maker. I mean,
the co-writer of the whole thing.
The co-writer.
He made himself this dumbass character.
The hero of the piece, ostensibly. And he's a cookie maker who talks to his cookies, who gives them speeches. Mm-hmm. I think everybody thought it was supposed to be cute. It's supposed to be a cutesy feature of Paul, but it's just creepy.
Yes.
It
is.
I found him so off-putting. Like, he felt like a alien that was trying to figure out, like, that things that humans in Hallmark movies.
Like he took over a human body and...
Yeah. And stuff like that. Like, he does a weird speech to, like, cookies... Mm-hmm. In the middle of the movie, which is supposed to be funny. I'll say, like, the one good thing about this dude is, like, how the running gag with him is that he's always volunteering to, I don't know, like, cheer up some little girl or, like, some puppy that got kicked in the face or something like that.
Yeah, true. Know, like, yeah.
That's, like, his whole thing. That's what he spends all time doing. Never mind that, as one of the sisters says, is like, is the whole economy for this city like just based on people giving stuff away to each other?
Because right.
Like, nobody ever needs to buy anything.
Yep.
Yeah. Which is fine. That's again where the self-awareness works, because it's something obvious to point out that's actually something I never thought about, but it's an excellent point of being self-aware where you can play it for comedy and where I started to enjoy this conceit. But also, Paul showing up is also the beginning of the downfall of this conceit.
No, for sure.
Because initially, Lacey recognizes Paul as a stalker type, because he thinks his way to flirt with her is to give her hand-drawn cards, which then turns into mini hand-drawn cards, which turns into he's drawing her while she's sleeping. Yeah. Drawing her while she's sleeping, yeah. And then turning that into a card that he gives to her. And then...
And that the little girl basically, like... I'm sorry. I feel like Paul is like straight up like Patrick Bateman.
Yes, for sure.
Because like he basically uses a little like a young girl who, I'll be honest, at the whole time, like she shows up and she's always like, I want to see my dad for Christmas. And you just kind of assume like maybe she's an orphan. So it's like kind of sad and everything like that. No, it turns out her dad was just a military dude. And
yeah.
Coming back, which... I feel like it's weird because like the movie kind of leans into like the sometimes sort of right wingy, very white, very conservative slant that some of these Christmas movies can kind of take without making fun of it either and just having it be earnest. And I'm like, again, another missed opportunity.
Yes.
But anyway, yes. So Paul/ Patrick Bateman uses this girl to have her accept the creepy as a card that he draws for her.
Oh yeah,
to normalize the stalker behavior.
Yeah, this is not good behavior for the youths. You know, like
no,
we don't want them emulating that.
No,
he's basically
not at all.
He's grooming two people at once. He's grooming Lacey to accept his stalkery advances, and at the same time, he's kind of grooming the young girl London to accept this behavior from her suitors way in the future. That's right. Okay. If someone shows destructive emotional behavior in your direction, you should fall in love with them because it just means they love you and they want to keep you.
And spoiler alert, as it ends up, these people also completely disappear from her life. So that girl is left by herself whenever her dad gets redeployed.
Well, no, her dad comes.
Yeah, but I'm sure he gets redeployed, and then she'll just be there by herself. Like, I remember that cookie guy that he used to hang out with. He just suddenly disappeared.
Yeah.
Never saw him again.
In the world. Somehow they end up on a date together. I don't remember the exact context, but I do remember one of the things that I do love about that I noticed this year versus last year, and we'll play the two examples, but the generic Christmas song that I'm kind of hyper aware of now, it feels like.
Oh, man.
That they're It's like someone tried to write a Christmas song. It's like AI tried to write a Christmas song. I don't know if you've heard any of the AI songs where it's just like a random assemblage of words that vaguely imply a theme. And last year with Switched at Christmas with Candace Cameron Bure, we had a particular song that we noted. And then in this movie, we had a song that, again, was an AI recreation of Christmas songs. So I thought we would play 2019's from Switched at Christmas, and then we'll talk about a Christmas movie Christmas.
Gather your friends, open the door, light up the fire. It's Christmas time again. Shines for you and shines for me, this magical day for me. Oh, here it comes on the sleigh, it's Santa Claus with the reindeers. Yes, look at his bear, what's in there, tell me.
It's just a random assemblage of Christmas style phrases that make no sense.
Mm-hmm.
So
I mean, think I'll this say was that, like Dustin and Eve singing like the same one Christmas carol over and over makes me, you know, it's like one of those things like old Venture Brothers, RIP, little joke is like how if you say a word over and over again, it starts losing meaning, like scuba, like specifically scuba.
So yeah.
Scuba a lot, scuba. And I feel like the more that they repeated like the actual like Christmas songs, like the more I was like, what do these words even mean? Like, what is this? What are you trying to tell me? And I feel like this song that we just played right now is the culmination of that. I feel like it's like, all right, words have lost all meaning. We don't actually know what Christmas is, but we think we do. Let's just write a song.
I actually think the one from this movie this year is even worse. So we can play that one.
Yeah, let's play it. Let's play it. So as we did last year, we had a dramatic reading of 2019's Switch to Christmas song. I would like to give a dramatic reading of 2020's A Christmas Movie's Christmas, most generic Christmas song. And perhaps these will become Christmas standards in the future when we fully embrace the idiocracy. But
I appreciate you took the time to actually note the lyrics.
Oh, absolutely. Of course. So here we go. 2020's, this is from A Christmas Movie Christmas, the generic holiday carol. Cookies baking, laughter in the kitchen. Children making angels in the snow. Hanging stockings, trees topped with an angel. Santa's coming, oh, the children know. Caring, sharing, lovely Christmas time. Merry Christmas, everybody.
I feel so
dirty? Just
wrapped up in the Christmas spirit now.
I'm fully. I don't need a tree anymore.
No.
I don't need lights. I just need these songs in my ears. And maybe we should assemble like, what are those CDs they make where kids cover
Kid Bop
popular songs?
Kid Bop.
Yeah, maybe we need a Kid Bop version of these songs where we have kids sing these Lifetime movie songs and we put them on a CD, which we can sell in like 50 sets, installments of $29.99 for 6 months. We can make $1 million, guys.
Yeah, for sure.
We can Kids Bop this shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if there would be much money there.
Oh, you say that, but
50 cents
yeah.
Streaming.
If that, yeah.
Royalties.
Oh, I don't know. I bet there would be a market for these generic Christmas songs, especially if they're related to a specific Lifetime movie. I bet there's a bunch of E Bells out there that are willing to.
You know what? Let's put it on. Fuck it. Let's put it all on. Put it out on vinyl. You know.
All right. Let's do it. What about cassette? Hipster.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe like a little.
Put it on. Yeah. Absolutely. This is right after this. We do get when Paul sneaks up and draws. So apparently, Lacey and Eve, they sleep in a front bedroom. There's a front bedroom to the house with a giant window that just exposes them to all of Christmas Town.
Yeah, so
this is when Paul,
they're matching pajamas.
Yes, this is when Paul draws Lacey in her sleep and then gives her the card. But I guess this is when the toxic masculinity of the whole movie starts to set in because, well, I say that we've already had fake Billy Zane with his assiness. earlier, he had dinner with Graham and the fam, and he called Eve a commoner.
True,
After she asked him to play the locals to save the local Xmas festival. Then Paul shows up and stalks her into dating him, stalks Lacey into dating him. And then Mr. Stevenson shows up. And he's supposed to be this like Scrooge type character in the context of the movie.
Maybe a Scrunch even.
Ooh. Maybe even a Scrunch. Look at you tying things back to it. That's a callback right there. And then finally, as we said, Noel von Vandersloten, whatever, shows up and to ruin the romance to make Dustin look like such a bad guy.
Yes.
This is when the movie starts to really turn at this point. Once Lacey goes on the date with Paul, that's the end of the good side of the movie. You can just turn it off after that and stop enjoying the movie.
Yeah. If you enjoyed it up till there, you will not continue to enjoy it because it becomes a very generic movie at that point.
Yeah, because at minute 48 is where our favorite Dustin explains the whole meaning of the movie when it could have taken such a better turn.
Okay, pick a bow, any bow.
Ooh. Hey, you're pretty good at this.
Hey, not so bad yourself.
You're so pretty. I almost wish they could stay wrapped forever.
Well, that's not the point of a present, right? I mean, the wrapping's just temporary. Wow. Meant to be enjoyed while it's here.
Yeah.
But that's kind of the beauty, right? Yeah, the mystery of what it could be. And the sense of anticipation.
And that's where the movie went wrong. Because, yes, I agree with the meaning of what he's saying. That's the specialness of Christmas, right? But then this is where the movie should have taken the really, really dark turn. And it turns into all these relationships turn abusive. It turns into a really, really shitty relationship movie. I don't mean like a shitty movie, but a movie about shitty relationships. Like, that's another. It could have taken a dramatic turn into... Oh, everybody seems great in this brief snow globe moment of time, but you escape the bounds of the magic of the holidays, and really these people just suck. Like, I don't really want to be around this person outside of the context of being drunk on Christmas.
Right, exactly.
That could have been another interesting movie, but they left that on the cutting room floor or the scripting floor, whatever.
Yeah, somehow whatever concept came out of this movie, and obviously, like we saw, it was half of a movie that was kind of funny and then half of a movie that's generic. It was good enough for the leading guy to actually land the leading lady in real life. So I guess maybe we don't know how to write a movie.
Apparently. Yeah. although I think this show has proven otherwise that we can at least join a writer's room and give some strong notes.
Yeah, that's true. Good point.
Now, 2 minutes later, after this speech, Santa reappears. And Santa,
I want to make a note there too. Why does she always need stalker Paul to go with her to figure out where Santa is? He's always in the same goddamn place. All she has to do is say, "Hey Santa, where are you?" And he appears.
I mean, hey, Santa. I feel like we could have a separate podcast about like the bizarre rules around the Santa's powers and also creepy stalker Paul's character, especially given the ending, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not the only one that's like, what is actually happening? Like, how is any of this actually working?
Right.
I mean, within the, like, because, like, look, give me any of your fantastical rules, you know, like, for any fictional universe, that's fine, as long as they are consistent within each other.
Yeah.
The problem with this movie is that it's, like, basically Deus Ex Santa Claus, you know, because, like, any one grievance... it can be, it's all fixed by Santa. Like, does it make at all any sense within the show? No, because, like, first he can transport these women to the small town that's, it, like, first of all, I guess now that I'm thinking about it, he transports them to this town. What is it? Holiday Falls?
Yep.
I think that's right. He transports them there. Are we meant to assume that that is just a real town in the United, like in the United States within the movie? Or is it actually a Christmas movie that the like the sisters are just are experiencing? You know what I mean? Like, is it like a fictional place or is it a real place within that world? The movie never makes that very clear, which makes the ending even more confusing.
Yes.
All we know is it's somewhat in the near vicinity of the big city.
Yeah. Just,
that's all I know.
It's far enough to be like, oh, if you move away, we're never going to be able to see you.
Right.
Yeah.
Except for Christmas.
Yeah.
Maybe Christmas Falls is just outside of Detroit. Maybe Detroit's the big city. Or maybe Frankenmuth is the big city. And Christmas Falls is a suburb. It's a tidy suburb in Christmas County or wherever they are. Yeah. I don't know. There's no reference to, yes, what's real and what's not.
I got the impression this is a totally fake universe that they're in,
I think, which, so,
like Javi said, makes the ending even weirder. But yeah, we'll get to that.
Yeah. So Santa shows up again, and we could have another podcast about Santa's powers. I could probably do 3 or 4 hours alone on Santa's wet mouth. I had to rewind several times. And
a very unfortunate phrase.
Yes.
Santa's extremely moist mouth.
No.
I mean, I rewound this several times just to look at his moist mouth because he I was trying to remember the actor that I would link it to, but there's a famous actor that also has a really moist mouth that I notice that just assaults my senses every time I see it. But Santa in here, who I don't even get the impression that he's a trained actor. Maybe he's a day player. Maybe he's typically a background actor, an extra.
I felt like they picked him up at like a Macy's and was like, you want to be in this movie. Yeah.
He may be a real back alley Santa. I don't know. But he's near to drooling. His mouth is so moist. And it was really quite disturbing. It in itself was a Christmas horror movie.
Yeah, I would agree.
So Noelle, she shows up. She's trying to destroy Christmas for our favorite Dustin and Eve. So she decides somehow, I don't remember. It's been a week since I've watched this. How she seized control of the Christmas festival. And she basically,
because, like, then Eve blames herself for it. But I'm like, no, this bougie lady did it.
Well, yes. Hang on. Before we get there, though, since we were just on Santa, we should probably have the whole Santa explanation of why Lacey can't leave.
You're right.
When Paul took her there.
Yeah, I got obsessed with the moist mouth Santa. Sorry.
Yeah, I understand.
There he is. Hi, Santa. Paul. And hello to you, Lacey. It's good to see the two of you getting along so well. Now, what can Santa do for you?
Lacey here has a question.
Actually, I have a lot of questions. But for starters, I know you brought us here for Eve's wish, but when can we get back home?
Is it that you want to go home, Lacey? Or is it that you want to leave?
This is what Eve wanted. I'm not sure why I'm here, too.
Well, don't forget, you made a wish as well.
I know.
So do you think you've gotten what you wish for?
No, not yet.
Wonderful things can happen if you give a place or a person a chance.
Why do people in these movies always speak in metaphors? What does that mean?
Is that a metaphor?
Can't you just answer my question?
It's better if you answer it yourself.
Ooh.
You're not helping.
Sorry.
What? What? Where did he go?
Obviously the North Pole, Lacey.
But
come on, it's getting late. Let's get you home. Come on.
So she's been through all this. She's been transported to a magic world. Eve has magical decorating powers, and now she's questioning what happened. Where did Santa go?
Yeah, exactly.
Right. But also, I kind of mildly resent the whole thing of a bit, I guess, basically Santa has been a matchmaker and she decided, oh, this girl who, like, at this point, we just feel like is not a bad person, despite what she claims to be. You know, she's just like, hey, I'm going through some stuff. Maybe, you know, she needs therapy, but she's not a bad person. She, her, the thing that's going to fix her, one, a man, weird, mm-hmm. two, a creepy man who apparently is, like, weirdly emotionally stunted and has, you know, needs to stalk and talks to cookies and apparently talks to Santa. That's a weird choice, man. That's,
yeah.
I don't understand. I don't know who it's more insulting towards.
Well, yeah, even the end of their discussion when Paul's like, let's go ahead and get you home. Like, he's got some more creepy stalking to do. He's got some more drawings to make.
That's the whole message of this movie, is that neckbeards give purpose to your life and that they can solve all of your problems, is that men fix all of your problems. You can't fix the problems in your own life. It requires the strong hand of a neckbeard to do that for you. Yep. And that's really disturbing, because especially in the culture that we're living in now, it's just such a creepy message. It's so poorly targeted in a movie that should have delivered a better message that, yeah, maybe it was right for Eve, right? But Lacey needed to find Christmas within herself. She needed to find the meaning of Christmas in herself and not in the arms of a stalker.
Yes.
I mean, I feel like that was a missed message.
I mean, this might be part of a larger conversation, but I do have one big gripe that I have with most Christmas movies is how, you know, they always star the one, quote, grouchy, scrunchy, person that doesn't believe in Christmas or doesn't like the holidays. And I get that it's like, whatever, these movies are just these blank, you know, things to kind of fill up your time with. But, I mean, you know, for so many people, depending on their situation, you know, like, the holidays can be pretty traumatic. They can be, you know, they can remind them of, you know, just, like, really bad stuff in their life. And I feel like if you've got a chip on your shoulder about the holidays, it's kind of shitty to just assume that, like, oh, you're just being a Scrooge and you don't like it. It's like, no, there's people that have, you know, like, bad family relationships. Mm-hmm. Or, like, say, for example, you know, you had somebody that you love that passed away that also happened to love Christmas. So that reminds you of them. And it is just, like, even more painful. So it's like, you know, there's still, like, a lot of things. And it just kind of assumes that, like, oh, you're just grouchy for no reason. And you just either need, you know, basically... Because if you notice, too, like, all these movies, including this one, the way that they get people to believe in the, quote, Christmas spirits is to basically beat them over the head with it over and over again. And then, like, you know, almost in, like, basically half of these people kind of end up being, like, Stockholm syndromed into loving mm-hmm. Christmas. And I kind of resent that. Like, somebody that has some very negative stuff related to Christmas and the holidays and everything like that, you know, like... Like, you know, before, especially, and like now, because of a kid and everything like that, I feel like, you know, I kind of softened up and just kind of gotten over my stuff and just so he can have like a cool holiday experience. But,
sure.
But, you know, like, I mean, I find that, like, I kind of resent that, because it's just, it's taken like a one size fits all approach to what is a very real thing. You know, like, you see, especially this year, you know, I mean, I know that there's a lot of people that aren't getting together with their families and everything like that, but there's the whole thing of, you see on, I don't know, at least my friends on Instagram, of just saying, hey, you know, just because people are family doesn't mean you have to spend the holiday with them if they're going to make you miserable or something else like that, you know? And it's just like, there's more to things of, there's more to not liking the holidays and just like, ugh, you're a Scrooge and you need to like put on a hat and like sing some Christmas carols and that way you'll be a better person year round. It's like, no,
mm-hmm.
because what I do find interesting is that the movie does seem to imply that like, Eve is kind of also messed, like real messed up, but just because she's cheerful and everything like that, like she doesn't get as much attention with it as I feel like she should, you know? Like, I mean, look, let's not beat around the bush here. She's like, I mean, she has a boyfriend that she doesn't know because she just kind of dropped into this reality, but she does in a way emotionally cheat on the guy, which, I mean, objectively isn't that great of a thing. And it's just like, oh, always super cheery and everything like that. But it always feels like it's just like totally like a mask for some sort of, you know, either insecurity or, you know,
mental illness.
Maybe, you know, like I'm not a doctor, but like, yeah. And I mean, I know that she does address it like, oh, you know, like I like these things because I get kind of, I'm a pushover and everything like that. But I still feel like there was something more to that. The fact that she was also kind of like the messy one, you know, like while we thought that Lacey was going to be kind of like the hot mess, if you will, you know?
Right. So,
anyways, yeah, I agree. I mean,
also like, I swear I hate that stuff with the Christmas movies. It's like there's legitimate reasons to not like the holidays. Leave people alone to deal with it how they need to, and just be supportive instead of, you know.
Yeah, but that doesn't fit the hyper reality narrative of Hallmark.
Sure. The magical reality. Yeah.
Which that's always my thought. Like, I mean, I in reality, I totally agree with you, and we know at the heart of these are just stupid cheesy movies. You know, yeah. And a lot of stupidity going into that. I don't think these producers, the people that write these things, I probably wouldn't even want them to try to attempt to discuss those issues because I think they would do a terrible job at it. Maybe you get somebody that could really write a movie like that. It's not necessarily a bad thing to have around the holidays, but I don't want Hallmark getting into that. I don't think.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I mean, I think that you would need a project that would be like a good version of what this movie is trying to be. You
know, yeah,
like
exactly.
Constructing Christmas movie. Like, I do feel like, put it this way though, I will say one exception that I saw recently that kind of wasn't as bad as far as like, oh, the grumpy holiday person was The Holiday with Emma Roberts. Like, but also like that took its time and everything. It still had some problems, but I mean, it felt a little bit more believable than just kind of like, all right, well, if we sing like the same carols and I don't know, put up like candy canes and stuff, like that way you'll love Christmas.
Yeah.
Yeah. They attempted, yeah, it just ended up being a formulaic movie in the end, which is really kind of, sad, disappointing. And it ended up taking something that could have been cynically helpful in a way and just turned it into the same old bland trope collection of tropes that we see.
Yeah. They went the easy route for sure.
They did. They took on something challenging and almost did that. It's like going up a mountain and you almost get to the peak and you're apparently out of breath and you say, just go on home. Turn around and go back home. But they didn't do that because the movie turns and Eve realizes she fucks things up when fake Billy Zane shows up when her and Dustin are doing something. I can't recall what. And old FBZ grabs her hand and then Dustin is then aware suddenly that she is dating fake Billy Zane. And then FBZ and Dustin both run away. Whatever his name is, Chad Coleman, Coochie Coo, whatever his name is. They end up both running away and being angry at Eve, which then makes somehow this turns into a fight between Lacey and Eve back at Graham's house. They both go back to Graham's, and the next morning they're pissed at each other, and it turns into this fight because they both want to go home now because they've ruined Christmas. Or because Eve has ruined Christmas, I guess.
Right.
And Eve makes a comment about how Lacey always runs guys off. And that at this point, this is where we get Grandma laying the heat and where she should have murdered one of them. But unfortunately, we didn't get that. So here's Graham laying down the heat to both of them or one of them. I can't recall.
I think it's just Eve.
Merry Christmas, girls.
No, it's not. It's the worst Christmas ever.
Oh, dear. Eve, I try to be supportive of everything you do. I don't get to see you very often these days, with you both being away in the city. And we just get a few days to be together at the most magical time of the year. And I want that time to be happy. So I'm telling you right now, knock it off. I will not tolerate this attitude in my house. Certainly not Christmas morning. Now, I don't know what's going on. But I'm here if you want to talk about it.
I ruined the Christmas festival.
Sorry to hear that. What What are you going to do about it?
Salty
what
granny.
What are you going to do about it?
Salty granny. This is where she should have stabbed even the head, and then Lacey would have been the hero of the piece.
Yeah.
When she finds out the power is in her to save herself from Christmas.
Yep.
But no, that doesn't happen, because of course, Eve and Lacey then turn their beat around, and they decide they're going to save the Christmas festival.
Of course, yeah.
They get Paul, creepy Paul, to make cookies. They make decorations.
Maybe this time he won't put too much ginger in them.
London decides she's going to bend fake Billy Zane to her will and bring him back to the festival, because when he ran away from Eve, he also said, "I'm not going to play the festival anymore." And so she brings him back when he's at the airport or the train station or I don't know what. I don't remember.
I think he was leaving the hotel and she stopped him, if I remember.
That's what it was. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we get I have here just audio of song at 1:15. I don't know if we pulled that one. I don't remember the context now.
Oh, yeah.
Something in this scene was sticking out quite a bit. Oh, is this FBZ's song?
Oh, yeah, it is.
Sorry, go ahead.
Somebody told me recently I need to let my guard down more often. So I'm here to give it a try. Merry Christmas.
I can't believe it. I can.
We couldn't have done it without you.
That's true.
Thank you for making this the best Christmas ever.
A happy day working away. It's Christmas time. Everyone's excited for Christmas to arrive. Christmas is in the air. It's good to be alive.
Another Kids Bop Christmas hit. That's the fake Billy Zane with "Hey Ho, It's Hey-o. Christmas Time."
Don't you love songs that tell you what time it is?
You know, hey ho, it's 3:47. Hey ho, it's the afternoon.
That was another example of salty Graham, when they're like, "We could have done it without you." She's like, "That's true." I just think it's kind of funny. They should have amped her up even more.
So this was the saving of the Christmas festival when fake Billy Zane shows up to save it with his terrible music, his kids' bop music.
And also, let's not forget the fact that it was basically token tiny girl who manipulates all of the adults around her, because I guess she's sad and her dad is in the military, you know, supporting our terrible capitalist interests. Overseas.
Which that was actually funny earlier. One of them called her that. I think one of her called her token cute kid or something like that. I can't remember exactly.
Token cute girl.
But they never go back to that.
No, they didn't. Again, that was the first half when it was better.
Yep.
Yeah. We do get, again, the second appearance by Mr. Stevenson during this, the Scrunch. And this is where London again plies her wiles and, you know, softens up those mean old adults, because London ends up running up to him and holds his hand, and then Lacey says, quote, about Mr. Stevenson, "Well, I guess everyone got their Christmas wish." So, first of all, what the fuck was Mr. Stevenson's wish? Was it to hold the hand of a little girl?
I know. Yeah, I didn't understand that either.
It was such a non sequitur. It made no sense. And then also Lacey, I'm sorry, London gets her wish because her dad returns from army and shows up in a generic military uniform, and she gets a nice hug from dad from army.
Yeah, but like you said, what does that have to do with Mr. Stevenson?
I don't know. I felt like there was a, like, did I zone out and miss an important plot point?
I don't think so. I don't think there were many of those, in fairness, but
I don't understand this point of Mr. Stevenson in this movie in the context of the movie within the movie, because he had no other play throughout this. Like, he should have only been confined to the real world, not an NPC in the context of.
There is a point where her and Bess Dustin are hanging out and singing their generic ass Christmas carols when nobody's listening, and then he like pokes his head out like, "Hey, keep it down, kids."
Well, true. He's a Scrooge.
Which again brings up another point of like, what the hell are the rules?
Yeah.
Like, yes. Because why is it that this guy that shows up in both worlds but is two different people that look exactly the same? Like, I feel like we're starting to get into some David Lynch territory, y'all. Like, this is Black Lodge kind of shit, you know?
It doesn't make any sense, you're right.
Yeah, it's Christmas Peaks.
Yeah, Christmas.
Twin Christmas Peaks.
Yeah. He's just there to make Holiday Falls a little less white. That's the only thing.
A little diversity.
Yeah, I would love it if the little girl started like,
doing that backwards. Glitching out, yeah.
Yeah.
So I will say that the one I don't want to say redemption, that's being too strong. But Eve does finally realizes that she can't run away from her problems and she needs to find happiness where she is, which is exactly the same lesson that Lacey needed to learn in this whole thing. But she learns nothing other than she finds out she's a better person because Paul stalked her and made her fall in love with him.
Yeah.
At least one person learned a real lesson that should have been delivered throughout this movie. But both of them needed to find that, you know, Eve needed meds to solve her mental illness and to find happiness with where she is outside of Christmas time. Lacey needed to figure out she's not such a bad person because she can't find a man.
Yeah.
I mean, Eve didn't discover her own mental illness, and Lacey didn't figure out that she doesn't need a man.
They need to have a sequel where anybody that's from Holiday Falls that's in the real world now, it's like a spinoff of Westworld or something. Like, they're all just robots or something.
Oh, weird shit. I love that.
That would be fantastic. I would applaud that, because the spell does end and we think, well, we're back to the big city, to Detroit, which is just outside Frankenmuth, which is just outside Christmas Falls. And well, these ladies are back to their depressing lives. Or are they? Because then the best Dustin shows up. He's suddenly a real boy. Mm-hmm. And they think, well, now Eve is happy and Lacey's going to be depressed. But no, fake Billy Zane is also a real boy in the big city.
Well, that was Paul, right? Fake Billy Zane doesn't show up, does he?
I thought, no, fake Billy Zane. I'm sorry. Paul and Dustin.
Yeah,
I got you right.
Stalker Paul and Dustin. Yeah.
Stalker Paul and Dustin. Yeah, not fake Billy Zane. But yeah. I'm getting my name. Too many names. But I do, you know, Paul, keep in mind, is this overly optimistic about everything type character. Everything is awesome.
Like, almost to the point of like being condescending, I would say.
Yes. Yeah, true. Yes, exactly.
He's got like a very like, I mean, again, like these movies are very shallow, but he's got like a very much like a privileged ass white dude kind of vibe about him. It's just like, gee, everything's chipper and
everything is awesome.
I feel like he would be like about the Black Lives Matter protest earlier this year. It's like, gee whiz, why can't people get along? You know,
response. They don't have those really, Holiday Falls because they don't have any black people.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because there's like the one black person, and apparently everybody avoids them.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
Which actually, are we going to get some threads here?
This is some subtext.
Yeah.
Well, the two lead women are vaguely not white.
Vaguely, in a Christian Krug type fashion, yes.
Just vaguely.
Yeah. So I would actually like to see the depressing sequel where Paul is now in the big city, the real world of Detroit. And he finds out that the world sucks in a lot of ways. Like, you have to find brief fleeting moments of happiness, but overall, the world kind of sucks in a lot of ways.
You can't give away all your cookies for free in actual post-apocalyptic Detroit.
Wouldn't it be funny if, like, creepy stalker dude is like, oh, man, I've given away too many cookies. Like, I'm about to declare bankruptcy. Hook it up. Send me to another reality so that way I can start all over again. I don't want my credit be rejected.
A Christmas movie, Christmas 2. Paul declares bankruptcy and goes back to Christmas Falls. It's a very long title, but it's a working title.
They got to find creepy Alley Santa to send between worlds.
Yeah, moist mouth Santa. Yeah. So in the end, Eve decides she's got to stand up for herself. She goes to the office on Christmas Day because, of course, Stevenson Peterson there is there working for no reason. She stands up for herself and I guess becomes a graphic designer. End of movie.
Yeah.
And see.
Right, but also, like, okay, so a few things real quick. So, one, I do not believe, like, my wife is an amazing planner, both by trade and personality. And, you know, like, one of the things that we, especially after we got engaged, right, like, we saw, like, the crazy ways that shows depict how events, or specifically weddings, are done. My biggest, most recent beef is Brooklyn Nine-Nine, where, you know, they basically confirm the vendors before and they pay them up front before confirming their venue, which is not something that you would ever do. The point is that last year when we watched this movie, she was like, hey, wait a second. There is no way you could pull off an event of this magnitude with literally less than a day's notice, like hours notice. Like even if, you know, generic creepy pop star dude was coming in, like they would need to know because they need to mic stuff, you know, they need to get like a sound guy out there, you know, they need to do sound check.
I got a solution for all that.
Like health permits to serve like that expensive hot chocolate. Like what's going on there?
Like you don't need any of that.
Yeah.
You have Santa's magic, Javi. That's all you need.
True.
Yeah.
You got moist mouth.
He takes care of all of that.
Done.
Well, you know, I also wanted to note at the very end of the movie when she goes into the boss's office and she's like, I mean, I'm a really good designer. I already came up with the whole spring catalog and I just want you to I want to show you this. And what are we talking about? It's Christmas Eve, right? Or Christmas Day or whatever is there. And he's like, okay, great. Come in on Monday and also bring me the summer catalog. Like, fuck, I had all this time to do the spring one. Now I got to like bust out the summer one in like 2 days. Yep. And why do you need that 6 or 7 months ahead? I don't know.
Yeah.
I just thought it was kind of a funny, weird off
the spring
point.
World, baby. We do this every, like, they do everything months in advance.
Yeah.
It makes no sense. Nothing. And again, like back to like what the rules are. Like, wait, have we talked about like the you know, Stalker dude and Dustin becoming real boys?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, where are they going to get social security cards from? They're not real, or they haven't been real until this point.
Their credit must be like non-existent. Like,
of course,
security going to come at them.
Yeah.
Yes. Like, they're.
Wait a second. We got these dudes coming out of nowhere, and you know, making cookies and stuff.
And what if the girls break up with them? They're totally screwed. they got no way to get a real identity.
Yeah.
Very true.
I have so many questions about this. And again, it just comes back to that whole inconsistency of the movie, which is frustrating because like this movie is nothing if not a waste of potential.
Oh yeah, for sure.
I did watch A Very Nutty Christmas yesterday, my second Christmas movie of the year. And that one actually has a magical component to it as well. There's a nutcracker that comes to life and he's an overly handsome nutcracker. To save Melissa Joan Hart's bakery. And again, tying in with cookies, a lot of cookies. But in the end, he goes away with Christmas and they solve this problem in another fashion. So, you know, they solve it. And I don't want to spoil it for anybody who's on the edge of their seat. I want you to go watch A Very Nutty Christmas on LifetimeMovieClub.com. Yeah. But they manage to solve it in a way that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So I say it makes sense within the context of a magical reality Lifetime movie, makes sense.
To that point, though, also, since Santa was magical enough in the real world to send them to the fake world, can he create the fake people, give them real identities in the real world? What's Santa's power scheme? Like, I feel like he's got like a wide berth of things he can do.
Like, is it one of those things where, you know, kind of like... Yeah, like are we being shown like is it a magical place? Is it an alternate reality? Is there cross dimensional travel? Like we just don't know, and the movie just doesn't care enough to like really tell us, even though it's so obsessed with the rules of Christmas movies, while not even adhering to them themselves. You know,
true.
Like I don't know. You know, I was saying this earlier, but it really feels like, you know, like I was coming in expecting a Dewey Cox kind of jokey parody sort of situation. And then we ended up getting like Bohemian Rhapsody, which is just like the most boring, somehow Oscar winning kind of biopic ever made by committee. And it just like, can't stand it. And the fact that the creepy stalker guy both wrote this movie, which I think we talked about that, and like if you look on IMDb, he's the first person that shows up in the cast. And I'm like, buddy, I figure you were an executive producer or something like that, but like this is dumb. You're not that good.
Yeah, and he made himself the stalker hero.
Yep.
This movie was a disappointment all around. Again, enjoyed the first half, but the second half was such a letdown. It was such like not at all what it should have been, and I was very disappointed by that.
In some ways, it's actually worse than what we watched last year, because last year I expected it to be a generic Christmas movie. I thought this had more potential. It's almost more of a letdown.
Actually, I texted Dustin, like, I was probably 30 minutes into the movie, and I was like, I don't know if this is right for our show. This movie is yes, the acting's terrible, but this movie is almost too good for our show. Turns out I was completely wrong. I texted him an hour later and said I was wrong. It's actually pretty good for the show because it is completely terrible in its message delivery. So it ended up being good for our show, but the first half was that good. I just wasn't sure if it was right for this podcast.
Right. I feel like at this point, like, look, how many times have I been doing these Christmas episodes? Like three?
It's at least three.
This is the third one, yeah.
I feel like at this point, you all got to let me choose the next one.
No.
I mean, you know.
Absolutely not.
The conceit of the show is great, but like at this point, come on.
Well, I will tell you, maybe a preview for next year. So I talked to our old pal Julie, who did the Friends episode with us. She demanded today, she threw me up against the wall in a rear naked choke and said she demanded to do the 1985 or 86 version of Babes in Toyland with Keanu Reeves and a very tiny Drew Barrymore, which has a great song about Cincinnati in it. So maybe we could do that. We could get her on the horn also, and we could do Babes in Toyland, which is not at all a Lifetime movie, but it is very unique.
I mean, I think, like, you know, we should do like at least a fun Christmas episode, like that we actually like of a good TV show. Like I don't know. I was just talking with some friends about the Community ones, right? Like they've got some really good Christmas episodes, and I hate to say it, but like the Terrence Killiam Glee parody episode might be actually like one of my favorite Community episodes. It's not my favorite. We'll have to talk about that in some length. It's just the songs are stuck in my head like year round too. Like especially because like this is before Donald Glover became Childish Gambino, and I was like, holy crap, he can rap. Like, this is awesome.
Or let me pitch you an alternative idea. Instead of that, maybe we talk about the Christmas episode of Renegade, where Johnny Cash shows up to be kind of a spirit of Christmas for Lorenzo Lamas, who's on the run.
Christmas. I'm trying to do my voice for a beat, but it's not working.
That's a terrible Johnny Cash.
But yeah, it is.
It was kind of a deep voice.
You're not known for your Johnny Cash impressions.
You know, I couldn't put that on my old resume.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Maybe next year. Maybe you'll get a Christmas wish and you'll wake up in a land where you can do a Johnny Cash impression.
Right.
All right. Well, after this, I think we're going to open up our Santa sack, moist mouth Santa sack of fun facts.
Ghost of Christmas, start sharing your pebbles with poor Barney, or this is your fate.
I can change. I can share. How's my future look now? Dino, kids, Barney.
Daddy, Santa's watching you.
Happy holidays. Pop's Fruity Pebble cereal, part of this good breakfast.
This just in, the Bedrock Blizzard has covered all of downtown Bedrock.
Even my Fruity Pebbles got frosted.
Cool. Now for a limited time, new Bedrock Blizzard Fruity Pebbles.
This Christmas, you can buy another toy.
or you can buy this. The Sega Master System of Entertainment, with super-sensitive control pads and a pinpoint-accurate light phaser that even registers misses. The unique Sega card with 256K memory and even more. Our Mega Cartridge, with an unbelievable four times more power than most cartridges. It's a future of excitement. The Sega Master System of Interactive Video Entertainment.
So the boy fell asleep in the Toys R Us store. And he woke up with toys from the ceiling to the floor.
We've got Kenner Silverhawks from the ceiling to the floor at Toys R Us. Heroes and villains, only $5.99 each. Super Attack Bird Tallyhawk, only $18.99. Silverhawks Mirage, $24.99 at Toys R Us.
Love growing up with my Toys R Us kid. Toys R Us. You'll never outgrow us.
My favorite heroes are Spider-Man and my Uncle Fred. My favorite heroes are Wonder Woman and my mama. My favorite heroes are the Hulk and Great Aunt Molly.
Underoos. They even come out heroes against warm water and detergents.
Batgirl and my daddy.
Be a Christmas morning hero. Give Underoos the gift that's fun to give.
Superman and my dynamite mother.
Joy to the world.
That's George Jones and one of 50 Yuletide favorites in Christmas country style. This three-album collection features the most popular Christmas songs performed by the greatest stars of country music.
Hark the herald
Marty Robbins.
Sing.
Connie Smith.
Oh, come.
Ray Price. Schneider, Tanya Tucker,
Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer,
Gene Autry,
had a very shiny
and Mickey Gilly.
Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell rock,
sleigh bell ring.
Willie Nelson. Christmas Country Style is a collection you'll treasure year after year. 50 songs on three LPs or three cassettes. A great value for only $19.95. Order now to assure delivery before Christmas. Here's how.
Use your credit card and call toll-free. 1-800-932-4000. That's 1-800-932-4000. Also save COD charges by sending $19.95 plus $3 shipping to Christmas Country Style. Post Office Box 1347, Hendersonville, Tennessee, 37075. That's Christmas Country Style, Post Office Box 1347, Hendersonville, Tennessee.
Remember that crazy bunch you grew up with?
Those kids were terrific.
Now you can see them again when the whole gang gets together for a very Brady Christmas Friday.
All right, well, let's dig deep. Let's go elbow deep on Moist Mouth Santa's sack of fun facts.
Oh, we had IMDb. To go deep too, because it was hard to find any.
He's got a very moist sack as well.
Yes.
IMDb gives this one a 5.6 out of 10, Rotten Tomatoes a 50%, and Amazon 3.9 out of 5, which, you know, I think is actually about on par, about where, not Amazon, but IMDb and Rotten Tomatoes, I'd say was about right. 50% is about where it should land.
Yeah.
Surprisingly. Yeah. Okay. So some fun facts from this particular movie. Paul, Brant Doherty, and Lacey, Kimberly Doherty, who played Joe's love interest in the show, actually met, fell in love in this show, and got married shortly after filming this movie. Apparently, they said the chemistry was evident throughout the movie. On Valentine's Day 2018, Kimberly Ruth Hidalgo and Brant Doherty finished the first draft of the script for A Christmas Movie Christmas. It was also the day that the pair got engaged. So they got married after filming the movie.
So she really likes stalkers.
Apparently. Kimberly said that really, Brant was really the only choice to play her on-screen stalker. She says, "We went back and forth, but when we got to the final draft, we decided I would play Lacey. In real life, though, I am 100% an Eve because I really embrace Christmas. Where we were filming, we had this huge ornament store, and I picked up a few while we were there." Wow, that's so Christmassy. To buy some things.
Yeah.
She also went on to explain that once the decision was made, there was no question that Brant would play Paul. and Lacey's love interest. One of the key reasons for creating the story was to have the opportunity to play a couple on screen, because I guess they weren't going to get that chance anywhere else.
Yeah.
As noted in the IMDb review, the Christmas scenes were actually shot in Frankenmuth, Michigan, which is a German town in Michigan, at their outdoor mall. So I guess they have a Christmassy outdoor mall there.
Apparently all the time, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is weird if you went there in like June or something.
Brant has previously starred in the Christmas film Merry Christmas from 2015, where he also played a baker who volunteered at an animal shelter. I don't know if he was actually a Christmas stalker there as well.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. I wonder if he was a stalker.
I'm going to assume that he was.
Yes.
The name of the actor, we called him Fake Billy Zane, but Chad Matthew Monroe, is actually a play on Chad Michael Murray, One Tree Hill fame, who has starred in a number of Christmas movies, made-for-TV Christmas movies himself.
An old Mark favorite, One Tree Hill.
That's right, One Tree Hill. TV Guide's podcast, All I Want for Christmas Is This Podcast, had a dark theory about this movie, that when everyone died when the power surge occurred, and this is just a ghost world created in their afterlives. So are they then returned to their real lives at some point?
Yeah,
I don't know. The ghost world?
I don't know how that theory plays out, but I thought it was kind of funny to think everyone just died and this is all just a bunch of BS.
Wouldn't it be funny if off screen, right? Like after everybody goes back to the real world, it's like a end of the world event that happens, and it's like, all right, well, Santa Claus is done with this reality. We're just gonna blow it up. There's a comet coming. We're blowing this shit up. We're like, I don't know, you know, Galactus is coming, or Unicron, or any of those galactic bad guys. Just that version of the Earth.
Yes, that would be amusing.
Yes,
I wouldn't mind seeing that actually.
Yeah, me neither.
All right, 2020 in pop culture. 1 gallon of gas is $260 today. The median cost of a new house is $306,000. Median monthly rent is $1,463. What's the chuckle there for?
No, it's sad hearing these.
Oh, sad.
Yeah. No, it's not a chuckle. It's a cry.
The median salary, which I still question, is $61,000. Minimum wage is only $7.25 today, unless you're in Florida. Which, for some reason, Florida upgraded them to $15 an hour. A movie ticket is $9.26. The cost of a Super Bowl ad is $6 million. And the top films from 5 to 1 of the year are Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker, Jumanji, The Next Level, Sonic the Hedgehog, 1917, and Bad Boys for Life. Wow, what a year.
It's called having no box office.
Yeah. The top songs 5 to 1 are The Box by Buddy Rich with 2 C's, Break My Heart by Dua Lipa, Mad at Disney by Salim Elise.
Yeah.
Blinding Lights by The Weeknd, which you spelled it wrong. Dustin, I don't know if you know this, but the word weekend is not supposed to have a third E in it. It's supposed to be weekend.
Oh, okay. It's not supposed to be. The website had it listed as that. I'm sorry. Or maybe it
all. No, it's okay. So you don't. I'm sorry you know how to actually spell the word weekend.
Yeah, I know.
And finally, Yummy by Justin Bieber, which if that's the same song he had on Saturday Night Live, that's a garbage song. But no surprise.
If it's all Jesus-y, then yeah, it would be him.
Garbage, 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 garbage. Set it on fire, garbage. 2020 in television. It's been an interesting year in the wake of COVID. But we start off the year with Kit Jennings, Brad Rutter, and James Holzhauer competing in the Jeopardy Greatest of All Time tournament, where Jennings won and walked away with $1 million.
Back when we had Alex Trebek.
Yeah, just to let you know, Alex Trebek also passed away this year of cancer. Hank Azaria announced in the wake of the documentary The Problem with Apu that he would no longer voice that character on The Simpsons. I don't know if they, I confess I haven't watched The Simpsons in probably a decade now. I don't know what they did with Apu, if they just wrote him off or they got somebody else to voice the character.
I can't even remember the last time I watched The Simpsons.
Like, it really pissed me off. Like, I basically wrote off The Simpsons after that, because like they basically had a whole segment, like a small segment of one episode where they were talking about like, oh, you know, basically they had Lisa, who is like the most hippie, liberal, progressive type of the character, like character in that whole show. Like, yep. Like, oh, well, it's kind of hard to determine what is offensive anymore when things are changing so much, something along those lines. And she looks straight at the camera, like is a very much like a pointed like thing against like people that are saying like, hey, this is offensive. I'm like, No, it's always been offensive. It's just that people are finally feeling comfortable in acknowledging that sort of thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it just kind of pissed me off that, again, like, not only are they doubling down on the racist stuff, but like they're using Lisa, who before, like, you know, was one for me as a non-meat eater. Like, she was one of the first depictions I ever saw of, like, oh, somebody that's being a vegetarian. And I was like, oh, that's really cool. So they're using Lisa, basically.
She was like the counter Homer, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, she was.
Yeah.
She was great.
Well, you know, I heard an interesting, another fun fact. So originally Deadpool, I forget the taxi driver's name, but Kumail Nanjiani was going to be that role, the taxi driver role of, and they wanted him to do an Indian, a stereotypical Indian ethnic accent, and he wouldn't do it. Or I'm sorry, not Indian, but Pakistani accent. And he wouldn't do it. And like a really thick accent. And so of course they got somebody to replace him. Which is,
this
I
literally
like
the plot of Master of None. Like, this is one episode of Master of None where they,
yes, yeah. Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah.
2020 is also the year where Kobe Bryant dies after getting to the chopper, and Gayle King came under fire for asking a legit question in an interview if his rape of a Colorado woman complicates his legacy. And she, her and CBS both come under heavy fire for asking that question.
I really don't understand that at all. I mean, I get...
Wait, what? What is this?
Oh, you didn't hear about it? Yeah, so Gayle King did an interview with another sports person. I don't remember who it was. And she asked the question, I guess they were talking about Kobe Bryant quite a bit, and she asked the question of his alleged rape of a Colorado woman, which I do believe he paid out money for.
He made the case go away, yeah.
Yeah.
He wasn't found not guilty.
Yeah, so she asked this in this interview. I guess this person was a friend of Kobe, if that complicates his legacy. And so, like, all the, like, she was getting death threats and from, like,
I think Snoop Dogg came after her.
Yeah. Snoop Dogg came at her with a death threat that she was going to be taken out. And CBS came under heavy fire for them asking this question. So we're just going to ignore crimes that he did? Like,
yeah, like, just because you died doesn't mean you don't get to be called out on shit, you know?
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Like, sorry, but...
Yeah.
Just because you're a good basketball
player. You did rape someone. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
exactly. It's like, no, like, just being dead isn't an excuse.
Yeah.
Right.
Ugh. Yeah, no, that's pretty.
No.
Noted political wonk Chris Matthews is faced with calls for resignation and firing after comparing the rise of Bernie Sanders to the Nazi invasion of France. He retires the following month after all that.
That's really weird to come from him. I thought he was like kind of a uber liberal guy in general, but
he is. It really strange.
Yeah. Anyway,
really strange. HBO Max launches on May 27th, replacing HBO Now, except for on the shithead Roku devices, which is finally, I think, is finally coming out
as of Thursday. And before that, there was a update where you could AirPlay stuff on Roku now from Apple devices. So that was pretty clutch. That's how we were able to watch The Undoing, which was okay.
I thought it was decent. I mean, it was kind of predictable, but
it's one of those things, right, where, you know, like this show, like that show, if it existed in a vacuum, I think would have been interesting.
Yeah.
But the fact that it's Nicole Kidman, who had just done Big Little Lies, two seasons of it, which is a big whodunit kind of mystery full of twists and like kind of twisty stuff, to follow it up with that as both as a actor and an executive producer.
Yeah.
It just felt like a weird choice. And I feel like it set up weird expectations for the show, which again, if it existed in a vacuum, I think it's fine.
Yeah.
But you know, me being like somebody that watches maybe way too much TV, I don't know, you know, was like, hey, wait a second, what's the deal with this show? So I don't know. But I'll say like the last episode, like the climax was like, man, that was some real intense stuff right there.
Yeah, true.
So I need to watch that. CMT, the Country Music Television Channel, launches an equal play initiative in which, effective immediately, songs by female country artists will be guaranteed to make up 50% of the videos on the channel. So somebody still has music videos out there.
Apparently.
No, they still did that on CMT.
You know, I do like that music videos are still a thing, but it seems to be still mostly on YouTube.
Yeah, YouTube. Yeah.
I mean, like, I know I was real excited about a Phoebe Bridgers video that was directed by Phoebe Waller-Bridge. It was like Bridge, Phoebe squared, you know?
Yeah.
It was for Savior Concept, I believe. I don't know. I think music videos still have their place. Like, I don't know if they need a network necessarily anymore, but...
Well, I'll be honest with you. I would love to see, like, you're not Pandora, but let's call it, like, Spotify for music videos. Like, I would like to be able to create, like, a 90s station, an 80s station, a yacht rock station, and I can see all of my yacht rock videos in one place. I could just put it on a channel, put it on my TV, because I agree. Music videos have a place, and I need my yacht rock, especially around Christmas.
Right.
I need to be sailing around Rye Rock Lake in my dinghy playing some yacht rock music videos on my sailboat.
Which, sorry, just one brief HBO Max thing.
White Rock Lake.
Yeah. There's rowers and sailboats out there in White Rock Lake.
Yeah, you guys need to watch the Heaven's Gate documentary, too, on HBO Max, by the way.
Yes.
Speaking of White Rock Lake.
Need to watch that.
I can't get for that guy's haircut. Like, it makes me, like, bowl cut. Like, nobody should have a bowl cut. I'm sorry.
No, Nobody should do a lot of things they did. I'll put it that way.
Like, don't have a cult where people kill themselves.
Exactly. That too. Yeah.
Also, I guess that's the major crime.
that's the bigger crime. Yes.
This year, also Alphabet Inc., who owns Google, announced they're going to discontinue Google Fiber IPTV after 9 years of operation to focus on their broadband internet service, which for some reason we still can't get here in Dallas because of competition contracts.
AT&T.
Austin getting that, and that was a big deal, and somehow we can't get it. And I'm like,
it's because of the
AT&T monopoly.
I forget the AT&T monopoly, and they own the lines or something. It's some bullshit where they can monopolize the lines around here, the broadband lines.
Mm-hmm.
It's complete bullshit. They did announce that the company will transition its customers to YouTube TV or to Fubo TV if you want to do that. America Ferrera also announced this year that she is going to leave the show Superstore in early February at the beginning of season 6 as the star of that show, which is a really weird choice to just abandon the show near the end of its run.
What I understand is that she meant to leave this seat, like that's the season that ended in early 2020,
mm-hmm.
which was the fifth one. And then they were going to, end it. But like what sucked is that because of COVID, Superstore was one of the shows that ended up getting like ended early and in an awkward spot.
Right.
So then she came back for this season. And the way that they explained her character out was like straight up character assassination. Like it was terrible. And like, oh, it sucks. And it's one of those things where I'm like, you know what? I'm glad that the show's ending. Because, like, if this is the best they could come up with, I'm like, I don't know if I really care about it.
It's weird that she would choose to exit the show when it's not that far from being done anyways. Like, that show would maybe – I like the show a lot. I think we're on season 2 or 3. I mean, it should go 7 seasons and probably be done, right? Or 6 seasons. Like, to exit the show now after you spent this much time on it is a weird choice. I don't know. It's just really strange.
Yeah.
And she claims it's for family reasons, which I'm not saying that's not legit, but at the same time, it's kind of a kick to the nuts of the rest of the cast when you're the producer of the show and you're, other than Ben Feldman, you're the star of the show, you know?
Right.
It's a weird choice. I want to know what's the real hot goss in the show? Why is she leaving the show?
Yeah.
The truth.
Yeah.
Hartley Sawyer was fired from the CW series The Flash, which terrible character. I hate the elongated man, so I'm glad he's gone.
He
was fired because of his misogynistic tweets.
Misogynistic and racist tweets.
Misogynistic and racist tweets, yes.
Okay, so I don't know if you guys remember, but like earlier this year, I did a whole thing where I was like, all right, I need to do like a DC catch up. And I like the one show that I really like is Legends of Tomorrow because
it's the best one.
It's insane. It's the best one. But then because it all eventually culminated into the Infinite Crisis on Infinite Earths crossover, I was like, well, I need to watch all the other ones to get context for some other stuff.
Yeah.
Went down and I was like, you know what? I like this Ralph guy. Like, he's, like, man. Like he's cool. And I was like, really? Now he's
I'll read you some of his tweets if you'd like to hear him why he was fired. These all came from 2012 to 2014. Sawyer wrote, as a lad, one of my favorite activities was kidnapping homeless women and cutting off their breasts. That's one. Another one that comes from December of 2012, dozing off on my couch like a child molester, a.k.a. my brother. Jingle bells, Batman smells, women shouldn't vote. If I had a wife, I would beat the hell out of her tonight, LOL. And let's see, as a lad, one of my favorite... Oh, I already read that one, I'm sorry. And the only thing keeping me from doing mildly racist tweets is the knowledge that Al Sharpton would never stop complaining about me.
Yeah, so he's quality.
So he basically got James...
Wow.
He basically claimed the same defense as James Gunn. I mean, I actually believe it in James Gunn because that's always kind of been his thing is, I don't think I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt because that was his shtick. He worked for Troma. He was always pushing the boundary.
Half of the thing is like being nasty, you know, like
yeah.
on Troma stuff. Like, I mean, if you watch Slither, it's like, all right.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but no.
Yeah, Harley Sawyer is not getting away with that.
No.
He was fired. This is also the same year that Bill Lawrence pulled three episodes of Scrubs because of blackface in those episodes. Season 3 is My 15 Seconds, Season 5 is My Jiggly Ball, and My Chopped Liver.
Really? Well, see, yep. It seems like one of those things where, like, it's corporations and creatives, like, kind of doing both a minimum but also like a weirdly misguided move towards like seemingly being like, you know, inclusive, because like actually here's the deal, my wife and I have been doing some rewatches through this pandemic just to kind of like, you know, not, you know, just to kind of pass the time because also we're stuck and it sucks.
Sure.
And Scrubs was that show, and let me tell you, it has been an infuriating watch. Scrubs, the best way to describe Scrubs is think of It's Always Funny, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, except like the writers and the actors don't know that the characters are terrible people, right? And JD is a shitty dude, like he's one of the stereotypical like sexist, misogynist, quote, nice guys, fat phobic, lots of weird gay panic kind of stuff until towards kind of the end of the show when they kind of weirdly embrace it, but then are still making fun of, you know, JD and Turk being like super into each other. You know, a lot of weird, like, you know, stereotypical, like, women are for Mars and men are from whatever planet we're supposed to be from, like, that kind of humor. Mm-hmm. And just, like, weirdly, like, low-key racist shit. Like, there was one episode where Dr. Cox spent the entire time telling Turk, this is why you're not a black guy. And it was because he didn't act, quote, like a stereotypical black guy. And I'm like, are you kidding me? And these are the episodes that they're pulling. It's kind of like how Community pulled the Dungeons and Dragons episode where Ken Young dresses up. Yes, it is technically in blackface, and I do think that it is a weird choice, and I wasn't the biggest fan of it. And if you're offended by it, I totally understand. But he was dressed up in like super, I'm talking like pitch black, not even like he's not supposed to be a black person, like a dark elf kind of paint. And they pull that, and it's kind of like, okay,
maybe it's an overreaction.
We're doing this, but then what else are we doing? You know, like, are we still allowing like shitty people on? You know, like, is oh yeah, that's right. Twitter's still allowing Donald Trump to tweet stuff. You know, it's just like, okay, like it's basically doing kind of like the bare minimum sort of thing, but also like in a misguided sort of way. I feel like.
I actually kind of agree. Not that they're putting up Song of the South, but Disney putting up warnings before, I think it was like Lady and the Tramp, that this movie contains things that were socially acceptable at the time, but which are outdated attitudes. So you're presenting of like, yes, this was acceptable.
Gone with the Wind, they did that too.
Gone with the Wind, they did that. Yeah, like, I mean, there's something to be said for, yes, it's a historically significant film, But yes, there were, our culture was different at the time. And so all you can do is try to explain that there are some terrible depictions in here, but they are still significant films in our zeitgeist, you know, rather than just trying to wipe them completely from the zeitgeist, which is never going to work.
I mean, there's even been that sort of debate, right, with the Cosby Show, right? Like, it was a huge boon for representation, and so many people's careers took off because of that, but it still has the Bill Cosby of it all. I'm not neither a woman nor, a Black American, so, like, I don't know what the right answer is. Necessarily, but like, I know, for example, like, I don't want my kids seeing like Speedy Gonzalez cartoons, which have been all but taken out, because like, at this point, like, sure, they were acceptable, but like, they don't, what do they add to the conversation? It's like, do we really need to see another sepia toned, like, dilapidated homes version of Mexico, which as of right, like, as of my, what, 30 something years, I've never seen, you know, like, I've seen more like rundown towns in here in the US than like I've ever seen in my time in Mexico. So, you know, like, what does that really add? So I don't know. Like, with Scrubs, it's one of those things where it's like recent enough, and the people that were involved, I feel like, especially Zach Braff, like, I feel like he still, like, if you were to interview him right now, he gives me the vibe that he would still think like, oh no, JD was cool, you know, like, and I just think that that's not a thing, like, beyond any racial stuff or anything else like that. I mean, I think like the character is just a piece of garbage. and it just goes for that, like, sort of lack of self-awareness for like the character that you're portraying, I think. But I do think
I don't think I've seen that show since it ended, since it went off the air, so I can't really speak to it. But,
well, did you watch the season 8 or the season 9 where it was?
I watched some of the ABC season, the first season they were on ABC, and I just like, this show sucks now. So it's really, I really haven't watched it since then. So basically, since when Zach Braff left the show, I wrote off
season after that. Season 9, which is the last one, and we
like, oh really?
Yeah, so we thought that he left at the end of season 8, and it turns out that he's still in season 9. So, anyway, I don't know. It's but I do agree with you, like, that I do like having some of that context for some things. You know, like, put it this way though, I don't think that Gone with the Wind has ever been that great of a movie. Like, this is my contrarian movie guy thing, but like,
I'm with you on that. I think it's pretty spare.
I think that, for example, Citizen Kane, a movie that was made like both in, Orson Welles' youth and film as a medium's youth, still stands the test of time. Like, that is, to me, a timeless movie, you know, like, some of the, I don't know, I would even say like the Universal horror movies stand up way better than Gone with the Wind does. And it feels like that's one of those things where it's just like, we were just kind of told like, hey, this is one of the greatest movies of all time.
If you're doing classics to classics, I think Casablanca is way better than Gone with the Wind. If I had to pick one.
Slaps, dude. Yeah. Like, I mean, I know that nobody, especially Bogey, would say that necessarily, but I think it slaps. Like, it is so good. Like, it gets to the heart of things. Like, there's some good emotional work, and I just, yeah, I love it. I've seen that movie like quite a few times, actually, just because it's like so good.
Yep, agreed.
Hey, if you don't like Speedy Gonzalez, how do you feel about his cousin Slowpoke Rodriguez? God.
Well, I think we need to put that warning for this episode.
All right. The top rated shows of 2020. Keep in mind, this is broadcast shows. Number 10, The Voice. Number 9, Football Night in America, Part 3. Number 8, NCIS.
Your favorite show, Football Night in America.
Number 7, 60 Minutes. Number 6, Fox Thursday Night Football. Number 5, The OT, which is also football. Number 4, Sunday Night Football Pre-Kick. Number 3, Fox Tuesday Night Football. Number 2, Fox Thursday Night Football. And number 1 is NBC Sunday Night Football.
God, a football pregame show beats all the scripted shows. That's ridiculous.
Yep. Yeah, it's pretty sad. All right. I thought it'd be fun. We normally talk about shows that are premiering in the year that we're talking about, but I thought it'd be fun to go through some of the new Christmas movies that have come out. And it's actually an interesting year. I mean, there's terrible ones like Operation Christmas Drop, which has Cat Graham starring as a hardworking congressional aide sent to Guam to investigate the Air Force's use of military property to deliver gifts and supplies to local communities. She meets and is charmed by the captain, Alexander Ludwig, leading the project. They fall in love, of course. There's also The Santa Squad, where Rebecca Dalton plays an unemployed art teacher who takes a job with the Santa Squad, who, and her job is to lift the spirits of a wealthy widower named Gordon, played by Erin Ashmore. She is basically a Maria von Trapp. There's also The In Love by Christmas, which is INN, another play in the word inn, starring Joanna Walsh as Mandy Leeds, who's a successful hotelier who's way too busy to come home for the holidays. This year, she has a reason to go home. The local inn is for sale. But when she tries to buy it, she runs into Lucas, her high school rival, who also wants to buy it, and they probably fall in love. But what I thought was interesting – well, I'm sorry. There's one more. Speaking of The Cosby Show, Rebecca Knight, played by Kesha Knight Pulliam, isn't expecting much from her return home because, of course, we're going from the big city back home. She's taking care of her niece and nephew, and she finds time to reunite with her childhood best friend, Drew, played by Jared Joseph. The two of them revisit their favorite childhood activity, the 12 Days of Christmas, and they find something special on the way – love.
Hmm.
And finally, I thought it was interesting that this was actually 2020 is actually a big year for the queer scene in the Christmas movies. So
awesome.
This isn't the first year that we've had a queer couple in a Christmas movie, but it feels like it's really becoming mainstream when it's on Lifetime style movies. So,
well, Happiest Season's a good example of that on Hulu, the Dan Levy deal, which I was hoping would be a little bit better, but Yeah.
I'll say, like, and this is not objective, but I feel like I've seen a lot of, like, people from the LGBTQ. I forget all the acronyms. I apologize. I'm not trying to be mean about it or anything, but I literally just forgot. But I feel like I saw a lot of people from that community be like, this is kind of jacked up. Kind of a jacked up movie, even though it is centered around a queer romance. I would have to say, we watched this back to back from that movie Prom on Netflix, and it kind of had some very similar things where it was like everything could have just been resolved if one person would have said, would have spoken up a little bit or something like that. And ends up being kind of mean spirit. Like, I don't know. Both movies kind of felt very mean spirited to me in certain ways, but maybe other people might disagree, but that was just my.
Well, maybe you need to watch A New York Christmas Wedding, which is where a woman is getting married to her boyfriend. And then her best friend from childhood shows up, who is a woman, and she discovers that she's in love with her best friend.
Mm.
There you go.
And then finally there's Dashing December, which seems like a true Lifetime style movie. It's also features a gay couple. A couple of men. When it rains 2020, this says, when it rains 2020 gay holiday movies, it truly pours. In true holiday movie fashion, this Paramount Network movie follows a big city man, New York financier Wyatt, who returns home to his family farm to convince his mom to sell it because of capitalism. But in a perfect Brokeback Mountain-esque twist, he falls for the ranch hand on the property whose name is literally Heath. Yeehaw. Mm-hmm. So apparently it's a big year for LGBT representation in these movies. Which is great. It's progression.
Sure.
Well, any more thoughts on A Christmas Movie Christmas? I think we probably talked about it to death, but final thoughts?
I mean, I think just, just watch the other movies that we talked about. So, Isn't It Romantic? They Came Together. Dewey Cox. Like, all of those are better genre parodies than this one, I would say.
I would agree with that.
Yeah, I would also say normally we ask here, would you like to see this remade? I actually would, because I think they need to take this exact same concept and actually play it for the comedic value that it could have throughout the entire thing. Don't just do half of it and then make it a half regular Christmas movie. Actually do the concept, and I think it has a lot of potential.
Yeah, I agree.
Yes,
I agree. I would love to see it as a either a horrible relationship drama, living outside the bubble, of Christmas, the wonderful bubble of Christmas, or a horror movie, like a true horror movie would have been great.
True.
Or just a really true, like, lampooning the concept type movie. Yeah. But
I need Zack Snyder to remake it and just make it dark and gritty and just...
And would you like it to be 4 hours that they play over four nights on HBO Max?
Absolutely.
And feature a dark and cynical Flash, because that's what we all want.
Yeah.
Ezra Miller, he's a whole another subject, but I mean, before all the stuff about him came out, like I like this take
on Flash. Wait, there's some hot gossip on Ezra Miller?
Yeah, if you look at look it up, I mean, I feel like we'd be derailing the convo here, but yeah, he's been kind of shitty. Apparently he there's a video, like, if you look up back in April, there was alleged details of him maybe like trying to choke a woman on
video. Oh, I see it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's to choke a woman in a video. Okay. Well, there you go.
Yep. So
wow. Yep. Fun times, guys.
All right, well. Times.
On that wonderful note. We hope you enjoyed this doubly special episode of The Pilot Project, and we'll see Javi back here next year for what is likely to be a very terrible Christmas movie from Lifetime or Paramount or UpTV.
Picking it, and it'll be Canadian.
The Pilot Project is produced by Mark Hudson and Dustin Taylor. Email us at pilotprojectpod@gmail.com or find us on social channels as @pilotprojectpod. Links to subscribe to this show for free and links to the TV shows we watch can be found in this episode's show notes or on our website at pilotprojectpod.com.
Thank you for tuning into The Pilot Project.
I'm loving this show.
We hope you enjoyed the show. See you next episode.